Good morning, good morning, good morning. Starting in 3, 2, 1. Good morning, good morning, good morning, everyone. Thanks again for joining me. Here's another edition of Thinking Out Loud with Jesse. Today we're going to be talking about another topic that has been really spinning in my mind for some time, all the way back to my school days. It's the double movement, the pendulum effect, and the idea of a cyclical back and forth of society as opposed to a linear progression. So let's dive into it today. Talking a little bit about an author of mine that I really like, Carl Polanyi, but also a lot of the furor lately with regards to some of the stuff happening in the political climate with the change over the last year or so, leaning more towards conservatism, towards right-wing ideology. This is all predictable when you look at some of the political theories that drive these kinds of behaviors. So to set the table, we're going to talk a little bit about society today, and we're going to talk about Uber, because it's a great example of what I'm trying to say. So, you know, in the idea of Uber, they didn't invent anything new. They just kind of made something that's readily available again, right? So you look at, you know, when Uber first hit the scene, it felt revolutionary. You could call a car from your phone. You could watch it arrive. You could ride door to door for less than a taxi. It was really cheap. It was convenient. Everyone loved it. But you look closer, what they really did was repackage two very ancient ideas of buses, communal rides with shared stops, now called Uber Pool, and hitchhiking, strangers giving strangers rides, now with a five-star rating system. They deregulated an old system. They made it sleek. They made it easy. But then it grew too fast when backlash started to come. Cities started banning certain services, drivers protested, regulators stepped in, the pendulum swung back. This is called the double movement. And it's not just about Uber, it is universally applicable when you look at and zoom out at any sort of topic, any sort of, you know, political science, if you look at history, if you look at any sort of development in the tech world, you can see the double movement in action. And so to explain what the double movement really is, I do need to call back to Polanyi. Carl Polanyi is one of my favorite economists. We've been studying him since back in my early days in political science. And his idea of the double movement in his great transformation book, whenever the market expands too far, society pushes back. And so what you have is the first movement, the push for deregulation, privatization, commodification of everything, land, labor, and even identity. These are topics we've talked about on this show before. You also have free trade, open borders, fast moving, things being broken and rebuilt. The second movement that follows the first one is social protection. It's people kind of coming back home and taking a step out and being like, okay, is this really what we want to be about? Is this going to stick? Is this something that we need to take a look at? And then they go into regulation. And this can come in the form of unions or worker protections. This can come in the form of environmental protections, data privacy laws more recently, rent control, antitrust. All of these things are aspects of social protection, as we know. The human response is really to the dehumanizing response of the market. And that's really, you know, again, a central theme of what I've talked about on this show is capitalism not necessarily being the greatest thing for everyone in the world and not being fair, especially, is, you know, it's evident here. It does have several dehumanizing aspects, and a lot of what my channel is trying to do is trying to humanize your life in capitalism, right? So when we look at some societal movements that kind of prove this more from a larger perspective, I guess, it would be the 1980s saw that neoliberal surge, right? You had the Reaganism, Thatcherism, Wall Street unleashed. Then you have the 2008 crash, and you have the backlash. You have Occupy Wall Street, you have several lawsuits, you have Bernie Sanders, you have a new generation asking what the hell happened there. Although that could have been regulated a lot more, it was a good example of some backlash coming in, right? So you do have this expansion, this new thing on the block, this is something that everyone's so excited about, and then you do have the societal protection. When we look at our world, there are some really easy examples that can just even come to my mind without having rehearsed them. More recently is crypto. Crypto would be the response to the incredible neoliberalist sensations over the last 40 years of deregulation, of currency manipulation, of absolute money printing. Cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin have been produced as a result of this so that they cannot be devalued by government spending. This has resulted into a lot of folks moving their money out of normal markets and into cryptocurrencies, which will lead to massive regulation and taxation. Companies and governments were very hesitant to even allow people to purchase Bitcoin. Now it's something you pay tax on here in Canada when you sell it. So it's a clear example of regulation. And so the idea is that, you know, markets don't really self-regulate. They kind of self-destruct, and people eventually say, okay, enough is enough, and they come back and regulate. Right? If you look at society from this perspective, it's also probably the reason we see a constant shift between conservative and liberal values in politics. Here in Canada, you have a liberal government for a period of time following a conservative government who followed a liberal government. And this is pretty true. Even if you look back, there have been instances where this isn't true. But by and large, it's left and right. It's blue then green. It's blue then red, excuse me. And even in the United States, you see this as well. You have decades of Democratic rule, of liberal expansion, and then you have decades of Republican rule and conservative values prevail. This is perfectly normal and a big part of what we really consider when we talk about that pendulum theory and the double movement. There's another kind of lens to apply to this theory when we talk about the double movement and a good way of looking at society, and that would be the generational staircase. It's not necessarily just a pendulum going back and forth like this. It can more be like a staircase going up and up and up to the right. This is a great example of the generational staircase. And when we talk about that, it's one hand goes up and progresses forward. The other part of the staircase goes to the right or upwards and sideways like this, right? So you have one generation that expands, adds things, increases stuff, finds new things. And then you have a generation after that that kind of tapers it off or tries to control it. We see this again, time and time again. We see the boomers who grew up post-war, living in order, in traditions, in institutions. Gen X, cynical, independent, a little bit more grungy. Millennials are a little bit more collaborative, a little bit more digital friendly, definitely prone to burnout. And then you have Gen Z and below who are hyper tech aware, skeptical, and more of an activist mentality. Each one of these generations will have their turn in the sun, will be the rule makers of the world, and will put in place things that they've always wanted to see for the next generation to come down and either accept that or knock that down, right? And it's really important to remember that each generation differs insanely when it comes to their values and what they really truly want. And it will be our turn, the millennials, one day to rule, and we're going to put in place a set of policies that are going to allow another generation to speak about us the same way we speak about the boomer generation, who we all love, but they also have, you know, from my perspective, an incredibly fruitful time to be alive, right? You can buy a house for 1 or 2 years salary, that appreciates over time, you have generational wealth. And here in Canada, that is the story for a lot of the boomer generation. Growing up in that, a lot of us are a little bit cynical. We definitely look at that generation as maybe a little bit lucky, and we don't really like to hear when they tell us, oh, we should work a little bit harder, or if we don't have a job, that we should go hand out our resume in person. These rules and these laws and these cultural values don't really have the same place in society as they did when our parents' generation was growing up. So when we look at the staircase and we zoom out, we can see that the boomers are on the top of the staircase right now. Our generation is looking to advance that, and we're going to be catching up to them very soon. But it's easy to see when we zoom out that there are very different perspectives from each generation, and so that's where the staircase will come in. We'll get back to that later. When we talk about the double movement today, there is quite a bit going on when we think about this, the pendulum, that idea, right? The tech and data is a clear one. There's another one, the climate change revolution, and obviously globalization and populism is another big time movement today when we look at what's going on, right? When we talk about big tech, we see that in the dot-com boom and following the social media invention, it boomed. It soared. There was no regulation. The internet also felt this way. I remember being a kid on that thing, feeling like no one could really stop you from going to certain websites or accessing certain information or finding, you know, videos, posts, stuff like that. It really felt like a pure democracy. Obviously now you need logins, there are privacy laws. Here in Canada, we have definitely some restricted content when it comes to news and stuff like that coming from America. And we also do see, you know, regulation of the next wave of AI and stuff like that. So we also do see, on top of that, the vilification of tech CEOs, where before we were kind of championing them as future Steve Jobses of the world. Now folks like Zuckerberg are not really viewed positively. Someone like Bill Gates has dealt with this quite a bit as well, where you kind of see them going from hero to almost technocrat in one generation, right? Same with a lot of the other tech CEOs. They've gone from these darlings, you know, the big one, Elon Musk, going from a champion of liberal values, of climate change, of saving the planet, to almost a right-wing populist in about a decade. So we can see that in play, the double movement going on there quite a bit. The climate movement is also heavily entwined with this double movement, where we saw free market capitalism just exploiting natural resources as it likes to do. And now we have climate protests, green harvesting, carbon taxes, and Gen Z, you know, completely embedding this in their ideology, which is great. Again, I'm not opposed to fixing the climate, making sure that it is healthy for us to live in and for humans to prosper long term. We also saw gross exploitation of that growing up, and now we're seeing a little bit of a curtail. We're seeing people being much more mindful of climate change, of their carbon footprint, of their place in the world. And definitely any company that wants to be serious about business today, they're going to be talking about the same sort of values as well. They're no longer espousing, we don't really care about the climate. And that's a great example of the double movement. Whether or not this is going to be a priority for corporations in 20 or 30 years would be my next question. Because corporations are quick to follow movements that garner public trust, gain them popularity, and win them points, right? But the second that stuff changes, that's when you see corporations kind of pulling out of those initiatives. A great example, going back to big tech, would be a lot of the DEI policies that they embraced in the wake of the 2012 to 2020 sort of era, only to pull those back with the new presidency and the SEC lawsuits against some of these big tech corporations. They have definitely understood who their new masters are, and they're no longer willing to espouse the same values that led them to be popular in the previous decades. That no longer works. The movement has shifted, and they can smell which way, or they can feel which way the wind is blowing, and so they change directions. When we talk about the double movement, there's another really big, you know, aspect at play, and that's the globalization and populism aspect of this whole thing, right? We see NAFTA, we see World Trade Organizations, global supply chains, boom times for trade. When I was young, globalization was seen as the thing to encourage. We want people to travel across the world, we want freedom of information, of goods, of finances. This is all good, right? Now we have Trump, Brexit, protectionism, nationalism. Even in Canada, we're seeing many anti-immigration sentiments grow. This is a place that has been built on immigration. This is a place that has always welcomed newcomers. And you're seeing immigration fatigue here in Canada. The social fabric has started to fray a bit, and identity becomes a big part of this, right? And if you look back in society, this has happened before in the lead up to several world wars. We had populism, nationalism, and protectionism all coming into play. And again, that's where that staircase and that pendulum comes back into it, because we're really not always moving in a linear path. We might be actually going in a circle. When we look at 100 years ago, and we can find a ton of similarities with the way things are headed, then we know what's coming. At the same time, when we think about this double movement, and we think about the pendulum theory, we know that nothing is ever going to get so dire that it won't come back to baseline. For example, if, say, right-wing populism continues to dominate the national and international political climate, then we would probably decay into something pretty terrifying. I think anyone could agree with that. My opinion is that it would never delve so far into that sphere that we wouldn't come back to some liberal policies. And it works like this. If you have 20 or 30 years of dominance of one side of the coin or one aspect of the pendulum, then the generation that's growing up under that thumb will naturally be opposed to that rule of law if it's not fruitful, right? If you have 20 years of right-wing dominance from this year to 2045, it's almost a guarantee that the generation growing up inside of that is going to be a bit more liberal. And this is just how it works. It's a balancing act, right? And so you zoom out and you see decades of liberal, decades of conservative, and that's how society progresses. This is actually part of the ethos and part of the design process that went into the American government back when they created it. They wanted by design a conservative society where everyone has to agree on something, otherwise it does not get incorporated into the actual society itself. And that's a great way of looking at it, where, you know, you have people from each side of the table coming and offering a point of view, a way to improve society, another way of doing things. And then you have someone else who comes in after that and takes what they want and keeps what they want and gets rid of the rest. If you look at that 200 years in the future, you see how society can advance this way, and it's naturally a good thing. It's naturally a good thing. But it doesn't always work out that way, right? And so when we look at the pendulum itself, it's going back and forth. Maybe it takes a decade. Maybe it takes two decades. We're going left. We're going right. But what if the pendulum's not swinging around anymore? What if it's kind of broken? And that's, you know, where we are today in the furor and the intensity of some of the politics that we're seeing, some of the societal developments that we're seeing, obviously with the way the economy is. What if the pendulum's not swinging anymore, right? Some argue that we're not in a double movement. We're in a fragmentation. Too many factions, left versus far left, right versus far right, institutional collapse, no clear center, nothing to swing back to. Crisis stacking, climate, economy, AI, global trust. Thinking about this, there's a lot going on here. And it would be easy for me to say, yeah, we're not in this double movement anymore. We're in a fragmented society. But if we fast forward about 10 years, I think it'd be pretty easy to place us on this pendulum. We just don't know it yet. And so we need the dust to settle a little bit. And we're in this period right now of change. And that usually happens when a regime goes from the regime that it was in the United States, of the Biden administration, to the Trump administration. Now, this hasn't been a clear break because Trump was in power before Biden and then he went back in after. But the policies and the society, the average person now, what they're saying, what they're interacting with, the values have shifted. Not only that, corporations have clearly been banging this drum as well. Now, I can see with my own eyes a lot of the public-facing corporations, they've slashed their DEI policies. They've slashed their work-from-home policies. They've slashed a lot of those liberal values that were embedded in the economy when things were going well. When things are going well, it's easy to add teammates. It's easy to add policies that are good for people. But when the economy shrinks, money isn't coming in like it was before, we see people going a little bit in a different direction. And I think that's what's going on today. You can really see a change in the air. And that's not something I'm necessarily happy with. I think that it's great to be inclusive. I think there are also drawbacks to that. But this video isn't about whether or not I agree with all of that stuff. It's more so about when we look at a 10-year or 20-year span of society, what we can pull out, what kind of conclusions we can draw. And in this case, when we look at the fragmented society, it's hard to see where we go next from here. I think we have probably a period of right-wing and conservatism seeping into the zeitgeist for a little while. And when you look at the young generation coming up, they're overwhelmingly right-wing. So we're definitely going to be in a period where these policies are encouraged going forward. Of course, the generation coming after that, it would be hard to see them being as right-wing as the one that is currently growing up. But again, I don't know the future, and I could totally be wrong. What I do know is history tells us that that's true, right? We have generations going back all the way to the war. You had people coming back from World War II who had values that they transmitted to their kids. You have the hippie movement right after that. Then you have the 80s, which is neoliberalism. Then after that, you have the 2000s, the dot-com boom, globalization, and liberalism afoot. Now we enter in the post-pandemic era, and you can see that it's gone a little bit more right-wing. Does this coincide with the economy? I think it does. And I think that, generally speaking, it's easier to be liberal when you have money. When you don't have money, things get a little bit tighter. You're not as willing, you're not as generous, and I think society is going through this a little bit. The average person doesn't have as much as they used to, even if you look back to pre-pandemic and the inflation numbers that we had. We've seen cost of living go up insane. We've seen inshittification happen everywhere. We are paying rents for phone, for TV, for actual rent and living, for food. You're paying a subscription to access your health. This is a new world that we're living in, right? So people are a little bit more conservative. And that is a factor of where we're at in this climate, right? So what? This episode really isn't just about theory, right? And we're talking about double movement. We're talking about the generational staircase. But what does this mean for you if you're sitting and saying, well, Jesse, that's great, but how can I use this information to better my life? Or how can I use this information to make better decisions going forward, right? If you're a creator, you can't be chasing a trend. And this is hard for even me to say because obviously podcasting itself is a trend. I think that it's here to stay, but you could totally tell me it's a trend. And when we think about that, build for what comes after the hype. It's so easy to get caught up in what's going on today. It's so easy to think that the way things are today, it will always be that way. It's so easy to think that, for example, if you have a bunch of people in your life that are fans of Donald Trump or they hate Donald Trump, either one day they could be singing a new tune, right? So what you need to remember is that things will constantly change, and that is a totally normal thing, right? The more things change, the more they stay the same. That's the old adage. When you think about yourself, think about in 10 years, or think about 10 years ago, some of the opinions you had, some of the things you were totally all in on that are not present today, right? I'm the same way. And I can look back with egg on my face on trends that I thought were going to stick around and didn't. It's the same thing with politics. It's the exact same thing. Things that prevailed then might not be shiny today. And if you have a very strong opinion today, it might not fit in with the society, and that's okay. In the future, that might be what everyone's saying, right? I can think of a great example. In Canada, 10 years ago, if you sat and said, I am anti-immigration, or I think that the government needs to take a serious look at who they're letting into this country, that would be not a good opinion to be talking about in public or to be sharing with people at a party, for example. You would expect to be ridiculed for that stance. That's a normal thing. Most Canadians are super inclusive when it comes to that side of the table. We are very proud of our history. Fast forward to today, I can hear it in my own anecdotal society with people I know, but I can see it online as well. The sentiment has clearly shifted, and people are saying, not enough is enough, but hey, are these ideas good to have, right? Should we just let in everybody? Should we let in millions of people a year? What is the result of that? And now we're starting to ask questions where we weren't before, right? So if we zoom out, we take a good look at things from that 10,000 foot lens, that really does allow you to step outside of that presentism, right? So if you're a founder, same thing, like a creator. You should expect that things are going to be regulated. You don't need to move too fast. And you shouldn't be really thinking about what things are today. Well, you should, but when it comes to how things are going to change, and if you're in AI, if you're in tech, if you're stuff like that, you should see some regulations coming. But as a founder, you should also be looking at 10 years ahead and remember that nothing is going to stay the same, right? If you're a young person and you're wondering, what does this mean for me? Well, I could tell you that you're not just late, you're the counter movement. So if your parents built this world, you get to inherit it, you get to reshape it, right? Society might swing one way, but as a youth, you can really choose where you stand and swing on this one. So if you're a young voter, it's important to remember that your voice is just as powerful as everyone else's. And one day, you will be the power center. You will, you know, most CEOs will be your age, right? And what will that world look like? One day, boomers won't be in control, right? We won't have a boomer in power in the United States. We won't have one in Canada. We'll have someone a little bit younger who is from our generation, and what values will they espouse? And that's kind of my point today, is when we look at it, each generation has gripes with the one that comes before and the one that comes after. It's important to remember that that's a totally normal process of society. One time, I had a professor, great professor, he was a bit of a Luddite though, and he was talking about how kids today, they are unable to pay attention to society. And this is back in 2011 or 2012. He said kids today are unable to pay attention in this world because of the phones. They're addicted to their handheld phone. They cannot be separate from it. They don't know how to be normal. They're not social beings. And this made me laugh because, well, it was a history class, number one, so he should know that each generation tends to complain about the youth of today. I can show y'all articles of like 1890, a group of men complaining about the youth today, how little morals they have, how they don't want to behave, how they don't want to integrate with society. I have another fun image, see if I can find it, of a picture. I think it was a picture of a bus in the 30s, I want to say. Everyone has newspapers in front of their faces. And it's kind of the same idea. People saying, oh, well, no one wants to interact anymore. This young generation is not personable. Society is going a different direction. This kind of idea is pretty normal. And, you know, when you look at kids today, we judge them for all of these fun things, right? I remember as a kid being judged for playing video games. Your parents are saying, no, video games are going to rot your brain. You'll never be an adult playing a video game, which is untrue. You'll never be able to get paid playing this. You should give it up. Also untrue, right? So, you know, when you hear these things, you're young. You don't always need to listen. They don't always know what they're talking about. That professor of mine complaining about his phone, or my, like, the kids being in their phones. Well, we also have the entire world in our pocket. We could literally research everything he's talking about as he's talking about it and verify it ourselves. So, you know, you don't need to be a Luddite, and you definitely don't need to hate on a young generation for embracing the technology of the time, the behaviors of the time, all this kind of stuff, right? When we look at this as a whole, we can see that there are definite changes when it comes generation to generation. And when it comes back to the pendulum theory and the idea of a generational staircase, we're going to be in this period of right-wing ideology for a little while, but laissez-faire will come back. Free markets weren't inevitable. They've always been engineered. And the pushback to these organic happenings, or these unorganic happenings, excuse me, is the organic part, right? So when we see that swing back, you should anticipate some regulation of AI. We should anticipate the rise of third-party candidates in U.S. politics and in Canada, in Canadian politics. We should anticipate changes in worker ideology as well. But this is all part of the pendulum. And so if we're seeing too much expansion on the right side of the table and we need to go back to the left, the next generation will almost ensure that happens. And this is the theory of Carl Polanyi. This is also something that I believe in heavily. And when we want to wrap this up in terms of, you know, overall themes, it's really, really, really important to zoom out. You got to forget what year we're in and that, you know, what happened yesterday and last week. We are in a world of cycles, and we're always in a cycle. And when you look back at society, you can always see where they are on that pendulum. And it's not going to be any different for today. But if we don't know where we are today, it's more of a factor of just the chaos and the situation not settling yet. The dust has not settled, but it will. And we will be able to place where we are today in this moment on that spectrum the same way we can go back to any year in history and go, okay, here's where they're at for that. So when it comes to the pendulum, it's always in play. It's always something to think about. We will pretty much always have a period of liberal rule and a period of conservative rule. And over time, it trends up positively, right? It's absolutely normal for someone to come in and slash policy. It's absolutely normal for a group of people to be hateful about what the last regime did. And then it's up to them to shape it in a way that's fair for everybody else. And what we end up with is a society that everyone kind of agrees with. And so it's important to have your moment in the sun, right? Even if you don't agree with a group of people, they should have the same amount of chances to make laws for themselves, to shape society in the way that they want, especially if they're voting in the majority. And you might not like it, but it is fair. And that's what society is about. We can't just have one group of people rule in place of the other. And what really ticks me off sometimes is if you're on one side of the fence or the other, that you believe you're morally superior. And I see this a lot from both sides of the spectrum, and it's a big reason they can't get along. But when you look at it, aspects of liberalism, aspects of conservatism are central to how we live our lives. We cannot just keep adding and spending and doing without coming back home and saying, what did we buy? What were the results of that spending? How can we do better, right? And so when we zoom out, you can see that liberals and conservatives both bring a lot to the table as a group, and we need to respect that. And so the double moon today and the inspiration for this episode is just taking a look at generationally how everyone's different, decade to decade, how everything can change. And remember that zooming out is the best way to view yourself and place yourself on the spectrum of society. I want to thank you again for listening to today's episode. It's been a fun one for me to pontificate with you and just talk a little bit about some of the philosophy behind the way I think. If you have anything to add to this, would love to hear it in the comments. Really interested, especially when it comes to whether or not you agree or disagree with what I'm saying. If you have something to add, please do so below. If not, it would really help me if you subscribed and listened to this channel going forward and give it a like. Thank you again for tuning in. It's been another episode of Thinking Out Loud with Jesse.